Hey there, Snicker Snacks. It's your old pal, Space Lord PJs, coming at you live in your ear holes here at Vorpal Tales. This is awesome. This is Adventurous Tall Tales, where we allocute about things awesome and adventurous. Today, I have with me two of my favorite peoples, at Made of Kimchi and at Patty Shakes. Introduce yourself, kids. Tell everybody about yourselves. Tell us what's shaking, Bacons.
After you, Patrick.
Oh, well, as the lovely Space Lord said, I am Patrick, found on the internet at PattyShakes_. And I just got done playing They Came for the first time. We did They Came from Beyond the Grave, and it was quite fun.
Cool. What did you play?
I played the elderly Professor Roland, the 60-ish-year-old paranormal professor who is just looking for some proof to shut up the haters, you know?
What was your archetype, I think is what it's called. Professor?
Awesome.
Awesome. Cool.
Yeah.
Fair enough. All right. Who else is here? I already forgot.
Dwayne is here.
Dwayne is here. Holy crap.
Dwayne is here. You guys can find me on the internet at Made of Kimchi. I did not get to play in They Came From last night because technology rebelled against me. But I did just finish up a game of Mage Technocracy.
Mage.
And I almost died.
Oh.
I instead got someone else killed.
Oh, like another character or just like an NPC?
Another character.
Oh shit, who died?
Key. we were in the internet, so he just derezzed. He has another life, but still.
Oh.
They came after me and I hid and they killed him.
so he got the one up mushroom, but that's it.
Very much.
Wow. Ouch. Poor Key. Well, I mean, you know, you're here, he's not, so yay.
That says not something.
Really. Key's awesome. Cool. So glad to have you both on the show. Let's get to today's topic, cooked up for us by a Forcus group in Climax, Georgia. That's a reference if you get it. It would seem that peeps want us to talk about Tales from the Loop.
Well, what is that, Sean?
Oh,
feel like I'm gonna be carrying this show.
I definitely weren't talking about how it's like Sean runs Tales from the Loop.
I mean, there's the internet, you can type in keywords, right, and research.
Tales from the Loop. Okay.
the long story short, too late, is there's this guy, God, I guess I probably should have looked up his name, but if I do, my internet or my system will probably crash because that's
mean
what my
the
system
guy
does.
The
artist
drew it.
Simon Stalenhog.
Stalenhog. There you go. I'm sure everybody's seen this stuff. It's basically very nostalgic, very 80s like pictures, but there's like a robot or a piece of weird technology in it. It's some really cool stuff. Like, it's some really cool stuff that's sort of like really cool sci-fi imagery that just sort of gets the brain juices flowing. And I can't remember if the book had any like point to it other than he's just going to draw some really cool sci-fi stuff. But then Modiphius had a game written based on it, which is the 80s that never was, which is really great and really fun. And then there was the TV show by Amazon, which was really great. It was really cool. It was like The Leftovers light, basically. If you've watched The Leftovers, you know what I'm talking about there, where it's just every episode is just so goddamn depressing. But Tales from the Loop, the show, was everything was very dour, very like, there was no real action to it. It was just misfortunes and weird technology just getting involved in people's lives and just causing like some weird stuff to go on. Like the first episode, spoilers, I guess, this little girl ends up going to school, coming back, and her mom did something weird, which caused the little girl to time travel forward or backward. Was it backward? Forward. She goes forward. And then she shacks up with this family for a couple of nights, and the mom is actually her as a grown person, and she's just kind of been waiting for this moment all her life. And while the little girl thought there was some point to her mom's disappearance, it was just weird technology fucking with her life. And then she ends up going back to the house, which throws her to her time, and then she grows up and becomes the mom. And then that's a character that just kind of goes through the rest of the series. It's really cool. It's really fun. There's like some good, like, just some really good, like Bradbury-esque sort of science fiction, like that old school sort of science fiction. That's like, oh, that makes you think, doesn't it? Sort of stuff. What do you guys know about it? Like, what's been your connection to it?
Well, honestly, I have seen the art book. Mm-hmm. Like I have been privy to that. I have been privy to Tales from the Loop and Things from the Flood.
Yes.
However, I have not watched the show, and unfortunately, I am not in your game, have not played the game either.
Wednesdays are bad for Dwayne. I know. I'm sorry.
You know what his stuff reminds me of? So I'm looking up Simon's like original artwork here. Mm-hmm. And what it really reminds me of is the game Scythe, the board game.
Yes.
This kind of like dystopian, like there's just a random mech in a wheat field, and you're right. Just like, oh, okay, that seems normal, even though, you know, these people are clearly using bolt action, you know, guns. Like, I guess right. They decided to make mechs before they made the machine gun.
I remember Scythe and Tales from the Loop sort of hitting at the same time, it felt like. So there's just something about the zeitgeist at that point in time where just weird out of anachronistic things just showing up, like mechs in wheat fields was a thing there for a while, which I can't remember what year that was, but I'm sure things got dark after that and we all just wanted to die. But yeah,
there's a weird 4-year period there where I just don't really remember much.
Right.
I don't remember. I don't know what year he made those books.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very recent. Like, it's pretty darn recent.
Is it like 2020 or?
No, it's like within the past 5-6 years sort of thing.
And I don't want to say that he might have gotten inspiration from something, but when I look at some of the art, I think Half-Life.
Mm. Yes, it is very Half-Life-ish, and I think that's what sort of drew it to some of the, because I learned from it from video game sites, which I think it was something like Kotaku was like, hey, this thing looks very Half-Life-ish, it's cool, check it out, sort of stuff. And I looked at it and was like, ah, that's cool. And I had no idea that years later I'd be running a game based on it, which, yeah.
It looks like Tales from the Loop, the book, came out 2014, and Things from the Flood came out in 2016.
Okay, that sounds great. Yeah, and there's a but next year I'm going to run Things from the Flood. So, but Tales from the Loop, the game currently is, you're basically anything from a 10-year-old to a 15-year-old. And it's a 2d20 system, which is really great. I love the 2d20 systems because I love d20s. You basically play a kid. The kids can't be killed, but they can get really messed up either mentally or physically. Our kids haven't really had that happen to them in the game currently. And then apparently, like, you, if a year goes around, then your kid technically levels up. But if you level past the age of 15, you become a teenager, and then you can't be in the game anymore because you're a teenager, not necessarily like a kid. So Flood.
Isn't 15 a 10-year-old, a teen?
So I don't think it considers it that, because 16 is like legal drinking age and you can get drafted and all that stuff. So I think that's where it differentiates.
Plus, I think it's like grade school versus high school, right?
Did you say 16 is the legal drinking age
in Europe?
Yeah, because it's a Swedish thing. So like the book actually is divided. Yeah. It's like, hey, this thing is written for like in the settings in Sweden, but there's a loop in Boulder, and then I was like, fuck that noise, I'm gonna put it in Florida because that I know Florida better. So I actually
the show takes place in Ohio, doesn't it?
I think it does. It really moves around. I want to say it's like just outside of Springfield or something like that. I think.
Yeah, it's way, way west from me.
Right. It's
like on the other side of Ohio.
Yeah. And then I was just like, well, screw it. They put the loop out in the ocean under the, you know, the
Mercer, Ohio.
Yeah. Oh, it's like practically Indiana. Like 5 minutes and you're in Indiana.
I guess it's easier to mimic Midwestern or, you know, North Midwestern scenery than just fucking Boulder, which is just nothing but mountains.
It's because of the cornfields.
Right.
Cornfields are always ominous.
Yeah, gotta have those corn/wheat fields.
I remember driving to Ohio. I was driving to Chicago for a Comic-Con, and there's a point when you get to Ohio where you're just like, when do the cornfields stop? And they don't. Not till you hit Chicago. It's like literally cornfields, the outskirts of Chicago, and then Chicago. Like, that's it. That's freaking Illinois, Indiana, Ohio sort of area.
A 50 square mile area that's quote unquote Chicago.
Yeah. So yeah, I put our setting in Florida just because I know it better. And I set it in the Pensacola area because that just kind of made sense being in that upper panhandle area.
Yeah. So it's funny for those of our listeners that are not from Florida. The further north you go in Florida, the more like southern it gets, the more quote unquote backwoods it gets, yes. Which makes sense because, you know, our panhandle is next to Alabama, Mississippi, those kind of areas you usually associate with. Well, you going to stop in for some sweet tea?
Yeah, basically, if you're like along that I-10 corridor, you're basically whistling Dixie sort of bullshit. Like,
yeah. That's,
and then once you get past Lake City towards, like, I think Gainesville is the next stop after that, the next major stop after Lake City.
Gainesville is very.
You're yee-haw. In the fucking swamp. Like, that's where the swamp folk live. And I'm not making fun of it. Like, this is literally what Florida is. Yes. And then. Ocala,
outside of Jacksonville.
Yes, outside of, and even Jacksonville's like industrial hillbilly, which I've lived in Jacksonville, or I lived in Orange Park, and that's basically it's like Green Cove Springs, Orange Park, the Naval Air Station, and then like Jacksonville. And then you can go further and it's Mayport, and it's like, oh, look at all the boats.
Well, people forget Jacksonville's a port city, so you get like,
yes.
You get that kind of combination with, like, you know, Jacksonville kind of being this pseudo large city, like corporate, you know, there's lots of skyscrapers and stuff like like Yeehaw Junction. And you're just like,
yes,
got this weird abomination of an area.
It is a weirdly industrial city. Like, I remember being in there because I lived in Jacksonville in the 80s. So it was very. Like, if you ever watched a Rocky movie and saw, like, what was going, like, in, like, port, or if you ever watched an 80s movie and there was, like, a port, and then just the city was really sort of run down, it was just industrial. It was very, very rugged. It was a port town, and then Mayport's, like, the major port, which I think there's a base, too, out by Mayport, if I remember correctly. Anyway, it's, like, Florida catches a lot of shit, but it's a cool state to be in most of the time.
If you like juxtaposition,
right?
Come to Florida.
I think, Patty, you were born here, right? Like you.
Yeah.
Okay. I think Patty and I are the only two people, and Steve, who were born in Florida. Maybe. Everybody else is not from Florida.
Yes. For anyone who has stopped by for the Tales from the Loop podcast, welcome to
Florida Talk. Florida Talk. This is funny because I'm actually setting the Fallout game in Florida as well. So
ground zero.
Yeah. Totally. Anyway,
are you running the Fallout game?
Yes, I am. That's another Wednesday game you don't get to participate in because.
Oh, shit.
Because fuck you in particular, Blaine.
Because I was like, you know what? I want to choose Wednesday because I don't want Dwayne, and I want
him out of my game. Can't stand that guy.
And I just want to run the coolest like settings and just be like, hey, Dwayne, I'm doing this.
I
How does that make you feel?
I actually really want to play in Fallout.
I know, I heard that and I was like, well, damn it. I can't switch. So you should like get to play on Wednesdays and drop something like Thursdays. You're not important.
No, I'm running Thursdays.
Oh shit, that's right. Cool. Oops. Yeah. Tales from the Loop.
So tell what exactly is, for those who don't know, what exactly is the loop? Like where?
So the loop. So basically, the story of Tales from the Loop is, it's pretty interesting because it actually is kind of related to Fallout. Where like in Fallout in the 1950s, people got really into nuclear technology, and then you get the Fallout universe. With Tales from the Loop, science goes, particle accelerators are awesome. Let's build a bunch of huge ones in different places, and then that sort of breaks the bounds of science, and then you get hover cars basically, and robots and high robot technology, because I think Japan just goes all in on robots, and so they developed like the first really awesome robots. And then you've got some power sources and things from the loop particle accelerators that then are like tearing fabrics in space, but also creating really cool energy sources that then you're able to power like super robots and, you know, hover tractors, which awesome. Nice. But it's really interesting because while that sort of gets injected into the timeline, life for people doesn't really change other than they have utility robots. And sometimes their house is retrofitted with some weird sci-fi tech that it's kind of annoying most of the times for some of these people. And then if you watch the show or you sort of play, or if you play the game, then you're always in the town with the loop. That's this massive particle accelerator that's causing weird shit to happen in your town. And you play as a kid, and then all the adults are just basically Charlie Brown adults and oblivious to everything. And the kids are the ones having the weird experiences, like dinosaurs showing up in their town or getting teleported off into weird interdimensional spaces and stuff like that. So that's really what the game is all about. It's sort of that nostalgia. And it's weird because the 80s has this weird, there's like the sort of Vice City, Grand Theft Auto 80s that we all sort of remember. And then there's that really dark Wall Street, Reagan ignored AIDS sort of 80s that gets brushed under the rug a lot. Mm. And that was one of the things where I was like, I'm on an 80s game. And like, we've all learned that some really bad shit happened in the 80s, and it wasn't great for everyone. It was just all neon or whatever. It's like, how do you draw that into a game? Because you just don't want to be like, hey, nostalgic 80s sci-fi, cool, right? So, like a couple of the characters are dealing with gender issues and just like sexual orientation and things like that. Spoiler alert, one of the teachers is gay, and that's going to be a weird problem for him to have to come to grips with in the last episode. Just because
I did catch that last part. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody started to pick up on that, and I've been dropping big hints. That was actually the first story I wrote, because that was like the big thing for the 80s was just AIDS, being gay, and just sort of struggling with that. I watched Live Aid, the Queen thing, a lot, just to sort of get in the mood for when I was writing it. And then the game structure is actually really cool, and it kind of gave me a lot of ideas on how to write stories for RPGs, because it's broken up into a couple of sections. Let me click over to my notes here, because I got...
I assume because this is Free League and Modiphius, that it's a 2d20?
Yes, it's 2d20, your attacks and thing. And then it's really cool because it's not 2d20. I take that back. I'm sorry. It's all d6s. And then so you have like the attribute, like strength, and then you have the skill, like move. And then let's say you have like 4 in strength and 2 in moves, so that forms a 6 dice pool. So you roll d6s, and a 6 is a success. So the younger you are as a kid, you have more luck, just because little kids have more luck than older kids, because older kids are just more skilled and don't need luck as much. So that's kind of, that's the way the mechanic goes. And there's no combat. It's just the kids get put in situations And then the GM doesn't actually roll any dice. It's just, all right, do this attribute with this skill and let's see what happens. And then you roll from there. But the game deals with what's called mysteries. Mm-hmm. And then there's a process of the mysteries. So one of the core concepts is like the beginning and end of your day are basically the most mundane usual things. Like you go to school, you have to deal with parental problems. And then occasionally you get that day where you introduce the kids, which is, hey, what sort of mundane thing is happening? And then the second phase is introducing the mystery. And then that's when like, oh, hey, there's floating anti-gravity rocks. Let's figure that out. Which is what's phase three is solving the mystery. And then there's usually some big challenge to overcome at the end, which is phase four, the showdown. And then phase five is the aftermath. As you go home, you're like, hey mom, I played with some anti-gravity rocks today. And your mom's like, you didn't clean your room. Why didn't you clean your room or mow the lawn?
Is your homework done?
Right. Is your homework done? It's like, did you not just hear what I said? And she's like, yeah, but you didn't mow the lawn. So whatever, go mow the lawn. And that's the game. Yeah.
So you said that the DM doesn't have to roll any dice. So that's kind of like the way that the cult is run, to where.
Yeah, I've heard that mentioned.
The DM just gets to say, well, this is what happens. This is, you know, this is what my guys are doing, or this is what your thing is. Now fix it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of broken me as a GM, where I'm just like, I'm moving into other games now where it's just, wait, roll dice? I don't understand what you're talking about. What does that mean? What do you mean I got to roll dice?
I have to move. I can't just sit here and talk.
I can't just like, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, I've been talking a lot. What you guys got?
I'm trying to fill the role of question asker this time.
All right.
Like I said, this is your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
I do have a question. So
yes,
you know, games like this have been coming into the limelight probably over the don't quote me on the years, I'd probably say over the past at least five years.
Yeah.
So first you had Stranger Things.
Yes. You
know, Stranger Things putting children in the face of, well, you know, it's a little bit darker in Stranger Things, but in, you know, in facing problems that they, mm-hmm. that them as children have to overcome. And it started with, just as it did with Tales from the Loop, it came from books, and then it went into show, and then it went for Stranger Things, it went to 5e. Like they have,
oh, yeah, that's right. They did have,
they have a Stranger Things. Yeah, it is a specific campaign for Stranger Things.
It's like Wizards Back too and everything, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have, you know, the same thing coming from Tales from the Loop. It was, you know, it started out as a book artwork, and then it moved on to show, and here we are with the RPG. Why do you think that you know, making games that are more, help me out here, Patty, you know what I'm trying to say, you know, that aren't all about fantasy and adults, but you're sticking children in the limelight, why do you think that's starting to gain some
I'll chime in briefly. I think it's because the juxtaposition of pure innocence to colossal terror / you know, danger is a very good pairing. You know, the idea that looking at, you know, Demogorgon through a child's eyes is, you know, this boogeyman come to life, whereas the tired idea would be if it's a normal group of heroes, they know Demogorgon, they're going into it with their paladins, and they're like, we got to slay the beast. Meanwhile, the children are like, what even is that thing? Is it real? Is it magic?
Why are we here?
What is happening? I am 10 years old. This is bullshit. Plus, I think it's also the idea of like the purity of a child. You know, they're not, you know, when you play D&D, your rogue is, you know, what can I steal? What can I find? You know, everyone's bickering over who gets the magic items. Whereas, you know, a kid doesn't necessarily go into doing something, or, you know, you just, you know, talk about the anti-grav rocks, you know, a kid's the, you know, a normal D&D character, how do I exploit these things and use them to solve a future problem? Where a kid just like, no, I wonder if I can throw this to my friend, and he throws it back to me.
Can I have that, please?
And so, you know, getting to, like, you know, playing a child, getting to keep that innocence of, you know, to role play that innocence, I think is very appealing.
Now, I know that Stranger Things, the 5e supplement, was very popular with the younger group. is, would you think that Tales from the Loop would be popular with a younger?
Yeah, I think it would be. And I'm going to go deeper on Patty's thing, and I think it's something that we've already talked about in other shows. Our world has gotten a lot more connected and a lot more smaller and bigger at the same time. Like, there's no, everything is just a smattering of gray, and no, there's no decision that's easy that doesn't have either massive or minuscule consequences attached to it. Like, if I drink this bottle of water, I now have to deal with the concept of what happens with the bottle. Like, that's not a big, huge thing. That's like a thing that's come in recently. And there's, like we talked about before, with just sort of the existential crisis of existence and realizing that all of our choices have consequences. All our world's a lot bigger. History wasn't exactly, we glossed over a lot of things in school. You know, a lot of people are getting hurt, and the news is just, it's all over. And there is that loss of innocence, and then there's that loss of control. And I think something like Stranger Things and Tales from Loop is playing on this dynamic of the world is large and filled with demigorgons, and I'm just a kid with a slingshot. What the fuck am I supposed to do? Like, and it's just glossed, and it's layered over with this 80s nostalgia thing, which is pretty popular now too. And then you just package that up, and then you just have an analogy of like waking up every morning in 2021, basically, of my world's miserable and I've got nothing to fight against it, and I just have to sort of make do as best as I can.
Okay. Because basically what we need to do is get on board and start planning and making our 90s nostalgia movies, TV shows, books, game systems now.
I mean, Thanks from the Flood already beat it. So, because that one is, you're 16 to something, yeah, and it takes place in the 90s. That sort of just like hyper bubblegum boy bands, New Jack Swing sort of existence.
Yeah, 90s was my childhood.
Yeah.
I will be actually playing in a game in May for that.
Oh, really? Oh, Thanks from the Flood?
Yep.
Nice.
Special crossover with some of the people from Darker Days Radio and some other places.
Cool. I will. I'll have to watch that and see what they do with it and get some pointers, because I read Tales from the Loop reads pretty easily. Like, it's only the mechanics of it is like 20, 30 pages long, and then the rest of it's just, here's a bunch of mysteries that you can use. There's a couple other books that are just mysteries and stuff. So a lot of even the fluff is real short and just sort of gets to the nitty gritty of the loop and how that interacts. The sort of Stranger Things-esque-ness of it is alluded to, but not necessarily baked into it. So you can have, there's a lot of different ways that you can take it. And so you can have like a lighthearted, fun, whimsical adventure. You can have that sort of like rough and tumble sort of Goonies adventure, or you can totally have like, oh shit, Stranger Things sort of adventure. So it's interesting. It you don't just end up running one sort of type thing. It's you can go a lot of different fun directions with it.
For people who are looking to get into it, how is character creation? Is it very difficult?
No, character creation is real fast. It does not take that long to make a character. It is basically, here's your core attributes. Here's like 7 points to fill those in or something like that. And then here's the skills attached to those. Fill those points in. You have a drive, which is like what keeps you going and gives you bonuses. You have a problem, which a lot of our kids in our game are just fucking messed up.
Yeah. And another question. Oh yeah. So in like when prepping for to run a game in Tales from the Loop, you know, we always, when we do these shows, we always talk about mechanics and rules and, you know, characters and creation, but you know, a lot of times story path games like this don't have any type of know, either one-shot adventure or like a campaign. Does mm-hmm. Tales from the Loop have something like that in their book?
Yeah, so you can just do Mystery of the Week, or you can do Mystery of the Week where those mysteries are then connected to a larger thing. I've done Mystery of the Week where the sort of results of it lead to something else or give clues to something else later on. Again, I'm trying to tell a much larger story, and there I drop in little bits, and eventually I'll get to the end. But
I ask this is a lot of people, especially when we talk about new games and, you know, how we like them, and, you know, we're older and, you know, we have, not going to say we have the ability, but we're more versed in writing our own adventures, stuff like mm-hmm. that. But for people who are just getting into the RPG world, and especially the younger crowd that's sort of like, oh, you know, TTRPGs are, you know, cool, and I want to start doing it, a lot of them turn away because it's like, well, I don't know what to do. I mean, I get the rules and I get what I'm doing, but I don't know where I am.
Right. And I felt like Tales from the Loop actually helped me, someone who's been doing this for so long, sort of get a working outline of developing any story, where you introduce the day, you introduce the players, then you introduce the problem, you encounter the problem and you solve the problem, and then status quo. It's like a Saturday morning cartoon, basically, like and
6 steps to the day.
Yeah, 6 steps to the day, basically. I know, and I've mentioned this in some of the chat channels, like I try to develop stories that aren't just a full-blown story. It's just story beats. It's plot points. And then either something sends the characters off into the next beat, or they get there eventually through just their own findings. And then, okay, check that point off on the outline and let's go to the next step. Because I found if you write a story from beginning to end, your characters are going to ignore 90% of that and care more about the random cat that you mentioned.
Of course.
Then or like, hey, there was a boiling teapot. They'll spend 2 fucking hours on that boiling teapot when there's like a monster in the closet 2 feet away. Like it's always what seems to happen.
It's because your players are themselves cats.
Yes. Yeah. If you just assume that your players are cats and going to ignore you and everything in the room except for that piece of paper off in the corner over there, then you have like 60% of the tools you need to write a good story. So like with this, the mysteries that I've written, I have basically said, here are the key points of this phase. Here are the key points of this phase. Here are the key points from this phase. And as we're going through the 3-hour show or 2-hour show a night, I just make sure I try to drop enough hints so that they get there. And if they don't, then I have to remind them that there was an 80s song about a telephone number. And then after the break, we start to figure things out.
I don't want to keep jumping over Patty. If you have any questions, please go ahead. I have another question. It's all about the game, because I'm just gonna let Sean do most of the talking today.
Captain question over here,
right?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to like asking questions, especially in a game that I've never played, I always have a lot of questions. You know, I keep talking about the younger crowd and getting into games, and I know that the setting of Tales from the Loop is set in the 80s. For those who don't have a very good understanding of what the 80s was, would it be easy to change the setting into something new, or because of the way that it's built, it kind of has to be in that time period? And I know you and Steve talked about, you know, bringing like Pulp Fiction, you know, bringing that for, you know, into the future.
Yeah.
Like, is this something that can be changed to where, you know, I want it to take place in the 2020 or, you know, 19.
I think
that's still the 90s, 1989.
I think the era and what goes on in that era, it has a key point to the game, and it gets your players thinking in a different sort of mindset. And I think it would be difficult because of the invention of cell phones. Like with a cell phone, there is no danger or challenge or problem, because you either can make a phone call to call somebody who can help you. You can either look it up on the internet, or you can just video it, so there's evidence of it. And then, so you know, if it's like, oh, we saw a dinosaur, A, you can call somebody, B, you can look up what kind of dinosaur it is, and C, you can videotape it and put it on the internet, and then there's just no mystery to it. So
gotcha.
There was a show recently that took place in current times, but they just made the conscious decision to remove cell phones from the equation. I can't remember what it was. And even though it was modern, it was totally modern times, they just said there's no cell phones. And it kept the suspense up because it was modern day and they couldn't just make a random phone call. I can't remember what show or movie it was, but and once you got past that, you were like, oh, the cell phones just don't exist.
The internet exist, or was it just cell phones?
They kind of ignored the existence of the internet too, but didn't blatantly say that. Crap, what was the show?
I have not seen this. Patrick?
Yeah, doesn't ring any bells to me.
Yeah, it's a god damn it, what was the show? Anyway, I can't remember, but yeah, cell phones kind of ruin being suspenseful in modern times. It's really hard to go, well, it's shitty for the DM just to go, well, your cell phone doesn't work, because even that doesn't hold up in most places now.
Right, yeah.
You get what are you talking about? I've got 5G.
I connected to the Wi-Fi before we even got here, man.
Right, like, and it's just like, okay, and sure. The wiki page is wrong about that. Somebody fucked it. I don't know. But yeah, I think it would be difficult to play this game if it was in an era where you had access to technology, like massive communication technology like we do today. I think that's what makes running a modern game difficult in the first place is cell phones. I mean, if you're like a super secret group, like if you play something like Delta Green, cell phones not necessarily going to ruin that game. But if you're playing something a little more subtle, then yeah, cell phones are probably going to make it difficult for you to have any sort of mystery or anything like that going on.
You almost got to go either pre cell phone or, you know, far enough in the future where like cell phone jamming and hacking is like a thing. Like, you can't just be like, you know, it's hard to do like a 2000s game where everyone has, you know, a cell phone.
Yeah. Just where hacking is so ubiquitous that firewalls make things difficult if you're trying to get somewhere. Because even Cyberpunk Red that we played, the internet technically doesn't exist. It's just a lot of hardened nodes of localized systems. Right. So you have to walk into the room and tap into that computer to hack it. You can't remotely hack it. When we played Infinity, you could literally hack anything within your vicinity, but there was things like firewalls and checks that you had to get past. So I think Patty's right. You either have to go before cell phones or so far into the future where like
it doesn't matter.
like cyberpunk hacking, you know the information that you would want to get via cell phone is now behind some sort of like firewall that you got a net run to or something along those lines. Okay. So it's kind of like playing a mage game where magic makes anything possible, but it doesn't, because you have to think about it real hard.
Yeah. Yes, I have many problems playing that game.
I was really excited to run this. It's been a really good sort of viewer ship for us. So I was excited, and I don't think it's just the fact that it's 80s. I think it's the fact that there's a lot of mystery to it. There's a lot of wonder to it. I've gotten kind of zany with it, and like I did the elevator game in it, which technically didn't exist in the 80s, but I was like, fuck it, I'm going with it.
Wait, what's the elevator game?
Okay, so if you do a certain sequence of events, or if you do a certain button sequence on an elevator, a couple things will happen. A woman will actually enter, and if you talk to her, you lose your soul. So if you ignore her up to the point that you get the sequence right and the other world decides to let you in, it'll go up to the 10th floor of the building. But exiting that 10th floor doesn't exit it onto the 10th floor. It exits onto the 10th floor of another world of that building. It's really freaky. Like, okay. Read about it. Yeah. So,
Is this like a Bloody Mary kind of thing?
It's a Bloody Mary level sort of thing.
Yeah, it's like Bloody Mary fringe kind of.
Yeah, it's in that same wheelhouse or that same, like, if you read Bloody Mary books, you'd probably find the elevator game. Basically, it's like scary. What was that? Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Okay.
It's that level of like urban myth sort of thing. Tales from the Loop.
Yeah.
Any questions?
I think you absolutely.
Yeah, I think you have nailed it on its head. Would you?
You've sold people on this game, I think.
Yes. Would you? Words that I cannot think of.
Think of them, Dwayne.
Would you suggest that people pick up this wonderful book from Odysseus and Free League?
Yes, I would. If you are a new GM, everybody's going to tell you to play 5th edition, which I would tell you I would tell you go pick up something like Tales from the Loop, where it's rules light and it teaches you more about story than it does mechanics. And I think that makes for a better GM and player before you start diving into paladins and other stuff.
Right, especially with not having to roll as a GM.
Yeah,
you do have the ability to focus more on the story.
You do, and you still have to think about like what abilities the person has to use and what that's going to actually entail. Sorry, Patty, you were going to say something.
No, it's funny. We were actually just talking about this last night after I finished They Came, and I was like, I think that's the really cool thing about the They Came series is, as a player, you don't really have any like true powers. You don't really have any like abilities or fuel sources to manage or anything like that. It's a focus on role playing, which is awesome. You just focus on your character. You develop them. You make, you know, you work on the ad-libbing. You work on the, you know, playing off what some other character randomly decides to do or say. And it's a focus on that because you're in the back of your mind, you're not like, okay, well, how many smites do I have left? And, you know, if I wanted to do this as a spell slot, like, do I have enough spell slots later on for the boss fight? Like, you're not doing any of that in They Came or, you know, Tales from the Loop or things like that, because you don't, like, there's not a focus on powers. It's just all you have are your skills you roll, and that's kind of it.
Honestly, I would be, if somebody was new, I'd be like, okay, let's play a one shot of 5th edition. Then we're going to put that away for a year and we're going to play these four other games, and then we'll get back to that, because you're going to learn, I think, something like Story Path and Tales from the Loop is less clunky, it's less chunky, it's more streamlined, and you're, like Patty said, you're not dealing with these extraneous things that just like, oh, well, how many smites do I get this week? Like, how many channel divinities?
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, let's work on you being an actor first before we work on your math skills and resource management skills.
Yeah, because I think that's what's missed in a lot of modern gaming. And something like Critical Role, I think, has brought the storytelling back to it all. But you still get into these games where it's like, I have a +1 sword of ogre slaying, and, you know, let's go slay ogres because I'm really good at slaying ogres. And it's like, well, I didn't write ogres in this game. I need
to roll 25 dice.
Right. And just like, exploding fireball. It's got 16 dice. Look at the damage. Numbers don't matter. Where I like games where it's measures of success, because you can then easily... I should say this. I love exploding numbers because exploding numbers are fucking fun. But sometimes you get into games where that's all that matters and what else is going on doesn't matter. Where games with levels of success, it gives... Because with something like D&D, a miss is a miss and a hit is a hit. With levels of success, that's the other thing about Tales from the Loop. You usually just need one success to accomplish something. It's only if you're trying to do something sort of hard that you need two successes. But even then, you can still succeed, but then you get a complication or you get hurt or you're like, I faced that monster, but I didn't face it as well as I thought I was going to, and I'm scared now, so I'm at a minus one to my dice pool.
You're never
so.
Technically failing. You're always pushing the story forward, but with mishaps.
Right. You missed that whole, you know, we just went three rounds where nobody hit anybody because the dice just were like, nope, we're not doing that right now. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, not to knock exploding dice systems and things like 5e, but just there's a time and a place, and I think there's a better way to develop a system to teach players the, I don't want to say the right way to play, because that's a shitty way to say it, but
I would believe that is a good way to say it. I mean, you always want to start with your character first. I mean, dice come later.
Yeah, I'm going to do a hot take and just say, what was I going to say? There is a right and wrong way to role play, but there is a lot of.
I agree.
Clutching of breasts.
Yeah, I just built a Dune character for Monday.
My pearls, I am clutching them.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry, Patty. I'm sorry, but I was just like, fuck it. I'm just going to feel out what this character is and then not care about what the numbers say and just put some shit down on the seat on the sheet and just that's my character. And that's kind of my philosophy for most character creation these days, is just I'm gonna do this and I'm gonna sort of randomize some shit. I'm gonna throw shit at walls, and then this is my character. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, then I'm still gonna have a good time because my character is then fucked up and I like playing fucked up characters. So, you know.
As long as you love your character.
Yeah. Yeah, like you said, I think if you love your character, the numbers don't matter. And then you get really involved in what happens to that character. And it usually takes like 3-4 sessions to start to understand your character and love your character. Because I usually run like 8 session shows and I hate running them that short. I'd like to run them longer, but I got a lot of games to get through. And so like about the 3rd or 4th session, that's when everybody sort of figures out the character. And then, you know, 4 more weeks and we're done. But yeah, we got like 2 more weeks of Tales from the Loop with the kids, and then we're going to do Fallout. So, which is another great Modiphia system. Like, if there was, I read the book and it's like, wow, Modiphius really fucking nailed how to do Fallout in TTRPGs. So good job.
I do believe that is our next topic for our next.
Yeah. Podcast. If you want to hear more about Fallout, you should tune in to the next one.
Yeah, we're starting to go off on tangents, so I think we should probably just bring it back around to the 80s that never was. And Tales from the Loop is a really great system. If you're looking, I don't want to say it's a beginner system because it can get really deep and weird, but it's a good storytelling system, and I think it's something everybody should have in their wheelhouse, because you can run very easily, like very quick one shots, and just have a lot of fucking fun with this game. Just remember that it's an allegory for your life and the existential crisis that it is, because you're an helpless child in a weird world.
Okay. Well, I'm going to say my last piece on a little bit lighter note. I'm going to bring to you Patty's positivity piece, the trip.
Okay.
Wow.
My last thing I'm going to say, and then I'm done chatting for this episode. Simon Stollenhag, who we talked about at the beginning, the artist that did Tales from the Loop, and made all those wonderful illustrations, everything is based off of. He grew up in rural Stockholm, just kind of chilling. And he began illustrating what he saw in front of him from being a kid. And, you know, he kind of was inspired by some other artists, and he decided to experiment with those landscapes he was doing and add some science fiction, because he's like, I think science fiction's cool, and I've got these cool rural landscapes here. Let me just put some science fiction stuff on my landscapes. And this was all just done as a side project for him. He was he was working, and he's like, you know, in my free time, I'm going to develop my skills as an artist and just kind of do this for fun on the side. Well, now look at him now. You know, everyone knows who this guy is. There's a TV show based on his art, just on his artwork. There's, you know, the tabletop series. He was tapped to do some artwork. I'm reading this. He was tapped to do artwork for No Man's Sky. Several universities and museums are tapping him to draw pictures for other things of like hypothetical climate change disasters and what the world might look like and that those kind of scenarios. My positivity piece here is if you have that side project that is just something you really love and is a passion of yours, don't be afraid to keep developing that side project. And, you know, if you put enough effort and love in yourself into it, someone's going to notice it. And, you know, just so my advice to you out there, listener, keep drawing, keep writing, keep, you know, woodworking, keep whatever it is that you do, you know, so someone will fall in love with it.
Work that side hustle, kids.
Yeah. I don't have anything to follow that. That was, yeah.
Patty, that was beautiful.
Oh, well, thank you.
Awesome. So as always, you can find us on the social medias at Vorpal Tales. Check out our Patreon at patreon.com/VorpalTales. See our calendar that pops up in our show reels on our website at VorpalTales.com and on our Twitch channel. Also, check out the pull list on our website. Friend of the show at Funky Thunder does his weekly review in no particular order of this week's latest comics. I'm going to post that this week. Be sure to check out our shop links on our website. Vorpal Tales has created several great supplements to enhance your games. There's more in the works for all the systems that we play to make your tabletop experience more Vorpally. Yeah, I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank Dwayne and Patty for showing up. Tell the listeners where the kids can find you. Where are you guys at? What's going on and next?
I defer to your demeanor.
But does that mean me?
Yeah. Yes.
Again, you guys can find me on the internet at Made of Kimchi. I will be here doing all types of Vorpal Tales stuff and find me either running a game or playing as a character. Just swing on by and check it out.
Dope.
And my name is Patrick. You can find me everywhere on the internet, including Twitter and Instagram and Twitch and everything as PattyShakes_. I'll be doing more of these fantastic podcasts with these two lovely human beings. Sometimes Steve or Tyler will be joining us. But other than that, you can find me DMing on Fridays and or, you know, being part of Jumpstarts or whatever it is. What other awesomeness that Vorpal Tales does on Fridays. We'll actually be taking a smallish break here soon to do Ravenloft. So, you know, all kinds of cool stuff coming up in store for that. I'm also on Tuesdays where we run our Kickstarters for Onyx Path. So currently it's Trinity Continuum Adventure, but who knows what's coming up after that, because, you know, Onyx Path likes to keep people on their toes and keep things hush hush. And then wham, bam, suddenly you're playing a Pulp Fiction Trinity game. So
here's a book you have to read in 3 days.
Yes. Good luck trying to make a character. Look, sometimes there's pre-mades, but sometimes there's not. And, you know, it's a super awesome system, but you better learn all the rules pretty quickly here.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you, listeners, for filling your ear holes with all our words, and for the love of the dice, game on.
Bye. End of episode 1.